Daily news and analysis. We keep you informed and inspired.
This is World Today.
TikTok says it will challenge the US ban signed into law by President Joe Biden and expects an ultimate win. The UN Human Rights Body has expressed horror at the discovery of hundreds of bodies from mass graves in Gaza and called for an investigation. China says EU investigation into China's medical device market shows the bloc is moving towards protectionism. Welcome to World Today, a news program with a different perspective. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. To listen to this episode again or to catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching World Today. TikTok says it will challenge the U.S. ban signed into law by President Joe Biden and expects an ultimate win. The social media service argues the potential ban is unconstitutional and will devastate 7 million businesses and silence 170 million Americans. TikTok stressed that it has invested billions of dollars to secure U.S. data and keep the platform free from external influence and manipulation. CEO Shouzi Chou said that TikTok is not going anywhere. He also said the firm expects to prevail. U.S. courts blocked attempts to ban TikTok by then-President Donald Trump in 2020. For more, I earlier had a conversation with Aina Tangen. He's senior fellow at Taihe Institute. The law stipulates that ByteDance must sell its stake in TikTok in 12 months under the threat of being shut down. What does the consensus on TikTok in the White House and the Congress tell us about the attitude, the general attitude of U.S. politicians on Chinese entrepreneurship?
Well, any Chinese company that rises to the top seems to be beaten down. In America, we have this game called whack-a-mole. It's, you know, it's a little furry creature pops up out of a hole and you whack it, and then another one pops out of another hole and you whack that. And that's exactly what the U.S. is doing with China. Anytime, whether it's ZTE or Huawei or, you know, companies that have better facial recognition or electric vehicles, solar panels, wind farms, you name it. Anything China has that is looking better than anything the U.S. can offer automatically gets the your security threat treatment.
Well, the main argument for the ban is that Chinese government might collect user data from the company since it is its parent company is a Chinese one. I mean, what's your thought on that?
Well, you know, I was saying there's something called due process. That means if the government wants to take your liberty and put you in jail or they want to take your property, the idea is they're supposed to present some evidence and give you a chance to defend yourself. All right. You know, the idea that you could do something. Well, the issue here is proof. This is a very, very thin legal ground. Expect a very, very vigorous court challenge coming from TikTok. They've already signaled that, and that is going to continue. Now, remember, they're talking about 12 months with an extension, but the election is going to be held in November, and Donald Trump is already politicizing this. He says, look, you shouldn't do it. Now, ironically, he was the person who proposed it when he was president. But, you know, with 150 to 170 million viewers, he sees this as an opportunity to steal, take some votes away from Joe Biden. And if he becomes president, depending on the new makeup of the Senate and the House, it could be a completely different story. So, as usual, politics in America is of the moment, not of a very long time.
Well, some congressmen also argue that the law is in part aimed to protect kids from the online harms brought by the app, because some of them might get obsessed of getting on the app. I mean, what do you say about that?
Well, and then it's time to get rid of Facebook and X and all the rest of them, too. I mean, it's ridiculous. Not even the industry is saying that's a valid ground. It's just a politician searching for a reason to justify their actions. And as I said, right now, things are much more, it's all about emotion in Washington, D.C., not really about rationality. They don't apply the same tests across the board. If it's Chinese, it's a problem. And as I said, you know, this is something that has been true in the past, and it will probably continue. So it's going to be very difficult to see a lot of Chinese companies thinking that they're going to do well in the U.S., especially if it involves anything with the public or with anything high tech.
Well, TikTok CEO responded to the law by saying that he's confident TikTok would win in court, adding that users should not expect issues with the app in the meantime. How do you predict the strategy of the company moving forward?
Well, remember, this is a company, not like Huawei, which is, you know, owned in China, privately owned, mostly by its employees. This is a large publicly listed company that has about 30 to 40% of its stock held by American hedge funds, etc. And they're not going to give up. Really. They're used to battling with the government. But right now, it's really about what is this valuation. They don't want to have to sell at a fire sale cost, at fire sale levels. They want a good valuation, and they have many different things they can do, but they're not going to be pushed around. In terms of the legal issues, as I said, this is very shaky ground. You're not allowed to pass laws against a particular company. It has to be, you have to have some sort of reason to do that. Mm-hmm. You can make laws about all the industry. They could say, well, we're concerned about children and we're having new standards and things like that. That would pass muster. But it has to be about everybody. I just can't single you out and say, you look suspicious. I'm going to pass a law against you. It just doesn't work with the American Constitution and legal system. So I'm pretty sure he's confident that he's going to get out of that. But the question is long term. You know, as I said, American politics, very fickle. You can't rely on it. The courts are longer based, but political willpower, as I say, it's hard to fight City Hall.
As you have already mentioned earlier, the TikTok app is one of the crucial platforms where the American presidential election, every side of it is trying to grab more audiences and have more influences. Biden's campaign is still present on the app. What do they look for there?
Well, they're looking for votes. I just don't know if I'd go looking for votes when you're going to people who don't like you because they sense that you're moving against them. You know, there's between 150, 170 million users of TikTok. A lot of them depend on, you know, it for their living, content creators, influencers, etc., and direct sales. They're not going to be happy. I don't think they're going to be really listening to Joe Biden say, hey, vote for me. And by the way, I'm going to do away with your living or your entertainment. Americans do not see the difference between X, Google and Facebook and TikTok. They just say, oh, this is silly. This is Washington politics at its worst. These guys are just trying to show that they're doing something when in fact they're doing nothing. All this talk about an energy that's devoted to TikTok, wouldn't that be better served, tackling the problems like the $34 trillion in debt, the divisions within America, inflation, poverty, lack of education, decaying infrastructure? Why is it that this is so important and all those other issues? Well, you don't need to talk about them.
Mm-hmm. Well, then, Ina, what does the contradiction tell us? I mean, they're banning the app on the one hand and fearing it for political purposes on the other hand.
Well, this is classic Washington. I mean, values, principles, heck with that. We're just going to go with what's good for us, real politique. If I can use this, I don't care, how it looks as long as I win. Unfortunately, as I said, the American public is just kind of like scratching their head and said, why is this an issue? We have concerns about China because the U.S. government and the media is always telling us we should. But in this particular case, it rings hollow. People go on there and they see, people doing little dances and they say, why is this a threat? And if I like watching people do little dances, why is that a threat to national security? And they can't quite figure it out. And quite frankly, no one else can either.
We have the election coming up in just a few months. Is the TikTok the company trying to hold on to everything they still have now and try to devise a different strategy as the political season comes over?
Well, obviously, you know, they're looking at all their options, but, you know, they of all people understand that you can't rely on Washington or a change in politics. You really have to go to the courts and then try to figure out what is the best strategy. These people are not trying to make, social challenges to the system. They're trying to make money. So as a result, they're going to do what they think is necessary. You know, they'll do what they have to do. And as I said, these are not novices to the American system. They're backed by huge financial interests, including one chap who's one of Donald Trump's largest contributors, who has $15 billion in stock in TikTok. So obviously, he's probably had a little bit of a word with Donald Trump about how important it is for him to do okay.
In the end, I know what bad precedent is a TikTok ban setting for other global companies trying to establish a business in America or any other place that's outside their originating country?
Well, you know, it's just not this alone. You know, you look at the U.S. wants to seize money from Venezuela, from Russia. They just want to take it because they say we don't like you and you don't agree with us, or you're starting trouble we don't like. Well, that's a threat to the international, you know, to the dollar, to it's the hegemony of the dollar. People say, I don't want to hold dollars if these guys are going to just suddenly decide that they can take them. That's not the deal. And then you have a situation where if you're not in line with politics of Washington or you're associated with a country they don't like, oh my goodness, they'll come right after you. So yes, America used to be the land of opportunity, a place where you could pursue your business and happiness at your own pace and the government wouldn't get involved. Today, it's a very, very, very different story. The U.S. is putting what it believes is its ideological certainty that the American system can be successful in any other system, like China's success, is in fact a threat. So yes, it's going to take its toll. Already you're seeing scientists of all shapes and colors saying, well, I don't want to be in the U.S. It's a little bit too uncertain. There's opportunity, but it comes at a cost of things. And in your business is about certainty. I don't want to invest or do something if I don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's hard enough to have all these variables out there. You don't want to add political risk on top of it. So, yeah, it's going to cost the United States.
Well, that was Ina Tangen, Senior Fellow at the Taihe Institute. Coming up, our exclusive interview with renowned Chinese economist Professor Wen Tiejun of Renmin University of China on so-called overcapacity in China's green industry. This is World Today. Stay with us.
A tale of love, peace, and friendship.
Dear Grandpa Tree, I wish that we could stay friends forever. Me, Dashen and Haiyan.
Friends forever!
Friends forever. Forever!
Based on real events, Echoes of Ku Liang, a radio drama series, relates the warm and vibrant life stories of the Ku Liang friends set in the historical tapestry of the 20th century.
Match!
We'll gather the world for you!
Let's see if we can catch some big fish and ask my mom to make some fishbowl soup tonight.
Do you guys know what I can do?
Bing, bing, an, an. Bing, bing. Ping, an. Bing, an. Symbolizing me.
床前明月光 疑是地上霜
Moonlight, dawn,
and the foot of my bed. 思故乡
With spellbinding performances and immersive sound effects, CGTN Radio presents you Echoes of Ku Liang, available on radio.cgtn.com and all major podcast platforms.
Such a beautiful story.
Follow Echoes of Ku Liang as it unfolds across generations, bridging continents and cultures in a celebration of love, friendship, and the enduring spirit of home.
Hometown. we apart? Kulyang, where we call it home?
Welcome back to World Today. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. A renowned Chinese economist says the allegation by U.S. politicians that China-made new energy products are flooding the world market is just a rhetoric designed to suppress China's development. In an interview with my colleague Xu Yawen, Professor Wen Tiejun says the U.S. believes America first and is using the so-called flooding to block China developing competitive, high-value products such as electric vehicles. Professor Wen is the Executive Dean at the Institute of Advanced Studies for Sustainability, Renmin University of China.
Thanks for joining me, Professor Wen. Recently, some Western nations have been expressing concerns about China's alleged overcapacity. In the case of China's production of electric vehicles, let's take last year, for example. China produced nearly 9.6 million units and sold almost 9.5 million units. It's also worth noting the domestic market accounted for about 87% of the total sales, while overseas sales accounted for only 13%. In the meantime, the International Energy Agency estimates a significant increase in global demand for new energy vehicles, expecting it to reach 45 million units by 2030, three times that of last year. So, in that context, how does China's production of NEVs represent overcapacity in the global market?
I think that we need the whole story. You know, the beginning of the new century, when large amount of these foreign direct investments flow into China, means that it's a transnational company, they move their industries into China. So China became the largest workshop of the industries in the world. Since then, there are very severe problem. And this is a serious problem, is pollution. Automobiles and industries, especially the energy. At that time, the energy 70%, 73 or 74% of the energy come from coal. So certainly that is the pollution became more and more severe because China became the biggest industrial country. So since then, I remember this since the year 2003, when China became the top one country, have very bad pollution issues, and then China tried to do the adjustment, try to change the energy and also change the automobile. So caused by the pollution, I remember that at that time, a lot of Western countries criticized China very seriously. They think that you made very big pollution and then also influence others and also influence the world. There are so many critics. So make China to think about how to change their strategy. So since then, they make very strong decision to develop the cleaning energy. That is a so-called new energy, like solar power and wind power and so on. China try to change the strategy, try to set up a kind of new development plan in name of the sustainable development and the inclusive development. They have try to raise up the new concept and then to encourage the company and the local authorities to change the way of the development, encourage the new energy and also encourage the electricity vehicles. So that is a kind of transition strategy caused by reduced pollution. So that is the beginning of the story. And then enlarge the production capacity and make the solar power and the new cleaning power become a kind of big industry. And electricity vehicles also became a large industry. Mm. So caused by that, now China can supply to the domestic market and also a little bit supply to overseas markets. But the main part of the products is sell in local, in domestic market. Mm-hmm. So I think that when you know the whole story, maybe we can understand how China developed the new strategy for change the problem of severe pollution.
Professor Wen, I'd like to discuss the word flooding that certain U.S. politicians use when speaking of trade relations with China. And also, when I was reading articles from the Western mainstream media, they use titles such as China is flooding the world with cheap goods to reboost this economy. Is that the correct term to describe China's trade relations with other nations?
I don't think that they are concerning of these low-value products. We did flood the world by the clothes and the toys. These are low-value products. Nobody criticized. And they just enjoy these cheap goods. Nowadays, China developed these so-called high-tech products and can have some kind of competitive in the world market. That means that you flood the world. It's not the correct concept. Just because of they believe American first, they would like to block China to develop these competitive products. That is the meaning. It's not caused by these cheap things.
U.S. politicians also accuse China of unfair government subsidies in the electric vehicle industry. However, to my knowledge, these subsidies primarily support startup companies in the early stage of NEV development. And also it's worth noting that China has been offering subsidies to foreign NEV companies equally, including the American company like Tesla. Tesla received about $330 million in subsidies from China in 2020. Also, on top of that, we have observed that the NEV subsidies also occur in other nations like in Germany, France, and of course the United States. So what's your take on the alleged impact of Chinese government subsidies on global competitiveness among EV manufacturers?
Just now I mentioned that because China wants to change the strategy, they need to have some kind of policy to encourage the company to do something right. So if they want to encourage the electricity vehicle, a new cleaning power, they need to do something to make the industries, these enterprises, to have the profit. So they are not only encouraged domestic enterprises, but also the foreign enterprises. Just now you mentioned Tesla. That is a very good example. And just most of these enterprises, both domestic and overseas, they all can have such kind of good policy to change their production from the pollution to cleaning development. So that is the policy efficiency. So I don't think that these subsidies can hurt other countries because it's just a kind of transition. We are transit from the pollution production to cleaning production. So that is my explanation.
How did China become the world's leader on green industries over the past two decades? Could you help us understand this process?
We never think that we can be the leader. We just think we are good students. We are good follower. And you know that Chinese leader very much emphasize to touch stone cross the river. So the stone is not the leader. We just follow such kind of stones. So the leader in front of us, they put the stone in the river. So we just touch and then we learn. So this, no matter how we join the world competition, the new techniques and high techniques we all learned from others. Yes, we do have some kind of self-creative, but most of self-creative just try to benefit our own people. So we more emphasize the domestic market, rely on the domestic resources and domestic techniques and research. So that is our attitude. We don't think that we will have such kind of ability to lead the world.
Professor Wen Tiejun, Renmin University of China. Coming up, UN Human Rights Body expresses horror at the discovery of hundreds of bodies from mass graves in Gaza. This is World Today. We'll be right back.
Welcome. I'm Elaf Ellard, economics professor and member of the Data Science and AI Center at New York University, Shanghai. On the World Today program, you can find in-depth and impartial insight, as well as critical commentary on key trends in the Chinese economy, financial technology, business, and blockchain. To prepare for the world tomorrow, join me on World Today.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. The UN Human Rights Body has expressed horror at the discovery of hundreds of bodies from mass graves in Gaza. The High Commissioner for Human Rights is calling for an investigation into the graves outside hospitals. Ravina Shamdasani from the Office of Human Rights Chief described the scene and said the investigation team should be diverse. Jody Jacobs reports from New York.
The UN's Human Rights Office says the ongoing fighting in Gaza has caused unspeakable suffering. It says the fighting continues to cause widespread misery, starvation, and disease. But it's the disturbing reports, the Human Rights Office says, that continue to emerge about mass graves in Gaza that has them concerned. Hundreds of bodies were recovered over the weekend at the Nasser Hospital in central Gaza and at Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City in the north.
Victims had reportedly been buried deep in the ground and covered with waste. Among the deceased were allegedly older people, women, and wounded, while others were found tied with their hands. They were found with their hands tied and stripped of their clothes. In relation to Al-Shifa, reports suggest that there were 30 Palestinian bodies buried in two graves in the courtyard of Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City.
In a statement released on Tuesday, the Human Rights Office has decried the ongoing violence, saying the intentional killing of civilians is a war crime. The UN has called for an independent and transparent investigation into the deaths.
Given the prevailing climate of impunity, this should include international investigators. Hospitals are entitled to very special protection under international humanitarian law. And let's be clear, the intentional killing of civilians, detainees, and others who are hors de combat is a war crime. The High Commissioner has said that the unspeakable suffering brought by the fighting, alongside the resulting misery and destruction, starvation and disease, and the risk of wider conflict, must end once and for all.
Search operations, we are told, continued on Tuesday, with search and rescue teams recovering at least 17 more bodies. In a statement released by the Israeli army on Tuesday, it says the claim that it buried Palestinian bodies was baseless and unfounded.
That was Jody Jacobs in New York. For more, we're joined by Dr. Wang Jin, associate professor at Northwest University in Xi'an, China. Thank you, Dr. Wang, for joining us again.
Thanks for having me again.
Now, Gaza's government media office blamed Israel for these mass graves. The Israeli army said in a statement on Tuesday that the claim that it buried Palestinian bodies was baseless and unfounded. Dr. Wang Jin, what has been Israel's track record in terms of circumventing medical facilities during the war?
I think first of all, we have to know that it is still unclear, given that Hamas claimed that Israel should be responsible for the massive grave, while the Israeli rejected the claim, and they stated that during their operation in the area of the Nasser Hospital, then they examined the corpse that has been buried by the Palestinians on the very near the very the medical center's ground, and then after they checked the corpse, because according to their explanation, that they might believe that some of the sites buried the bodies of Israeli detainees held by Hamas. So that is why they just try to examine them, and then some of them were reburied. So that is why a lot of things are still unclear. Mm. But if we look at the details or the reports, especially from United Nations, For example, they say, okay, now the, some of the bodies, their hands has been tied, and the United Nations the Human Rights Office claimed that some of the bodies were found because their hands are tied and also their clothes are stripped off. Mm. So that is why I think it is it should be considered as a kind of organized killing, because if you just look at how the bodies were performed, how the body showed to the world. So that is why I think it is very it's a very very serious matter. It was just released, but right now everything is unclear. That is why I think we need to wait and wait for further investigation and the conclusion from the further investigation that organized by the third party.
Certainly very tragic. Does the discovery of these mass graves have influence on global public opinion on the ongoing Israel-Hamas conflict?
I think it actually it is a very new new bomb that would burn the further anger of the Palestinians against Israel, and also will fuel the anger of the Arabs and also as well as the Islamic war to Israel. And on the other hand, if we look, if we read from the Israeli internal internal news, for example, the Yediot Aharonot, which means the latest news, a very very major the newspapers inside Israel, maybe the most widely published newspaper inside Israel. If we read from the news and their website, we are not able to find enough information about it. Some other Israeli news, for example, the Time of Israel, or some other Haaretz, means the homeland, that they might publish some of the descriptions of what is going on. But I think from inside Israel, they just ignore it. They just list it in, as a very very secondary news at home. So the thing here is that the Palestinians and Arabs, and as well as I think the most public in this world, they are very angry. They hope that the truth could be released. But from the perspective of Israel, they believe it's not true. They believe that the blame against themselves are baseless. So, and also they hope to ignore this, the what is ongoing there. So that is why I think they have different different results, and the public opinion from the two sides are totally separated. Even when these things outbreak, erupted. This, although that is a very major thing, but as I mentioned, the public opinion between two sides are totally separated.
A reporter has said the UN called for a clear, transparent, and credible investigation. Dr. Wang Jing, who should be leading such investigation, and how should the investigation be conducted?
I think the investigation is highly needed and urgently needed, because we know that some parts of the Gaza Strip is still under war, and this event is a very, very serious matter, given that some of the people, I think they were killed they were killed through the very organized manner. So that is why I think once it is proved, it should be considered a very, very, very serious matter that violates the basic human rights. So that is why I think the United Nations should be should be considered as a very very reliable organization that could have the credibility to conduct this investigation. And meanwhile, that the United Nations could also nominate some of the representatives and experts from the whole world to organize a very special committee or special team with the very privileged to act freely inside Gaza Strip for seeking the truth, what has happened and how this massive grave came. So I think that is why the very organization with the credibilities and the widely accepted reputation should be responsible for conducting this investigation. That is why I think United Nations should be considered as the very center to play a more important role in the future.
That is certainly the hope. Thank you, Dr. Wang Jin. We appreciate your time and insight. Wang Jin, associate professor at Northwest University in Xi'an, China. This is World Today. Stay with us.
Mind the loopholes in AI technology. Leading Chinese and American high-tech firms have teamed up to publish the first global standards on generative artificial intelligence and large language models. This cooperation comes as AI-generated deepfake contents negatively impact things from elections to money transactions in our daily lives. How far can AI go? Does the outlook of the AI sector still look as rosy as people had expected at the beginning? Find out on this week's Chat Lounge, wherever you get your favorite podcast, and on CGTN Radio.
Welcome back to World Today. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. China says EU investigation into China's medical device market shows the bloc is moving towards protectionism. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said at the regular briefing on Wednesday that EU's action would damage its own image. He called on Brussels to stop using any excuse to groundlessly suppress and restrict Chinese business. The EU Commission announced on Wednesday a probe into what Brussels perceives as unfair discrimination in the Chinese medical equipment procurement market. EU said the probe is meant to determine if European suppliers have been granted fair access in China. Well, for more, we're joined by Professor Qu Qiang, Fellow of Belt and Road Research Center at Minzu University of China. Thank you, Professor Qu. It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
Now, first of all things considered, how does the Chinese market of medical device look like today? You know, how big is it for both domestic and global sellers?
Well, Chinese market is always big, isn't it? Recently, as we estimated by the end of last year, Chinese medical devices market is probably sized at 1.2 or 1.3 trillion Chinese yuan. So I think right now we are already in the second largest medical devices market of the whole world, just next to North America. So I think this is a very, very unignorable, you know, cake in the whole world market if you are doing this kind of a line of businesses. So no one can afford to lose this market.
Well, the European medical device companies say due to quote-unquote buy China policy, the EU's medical device industry has repeatedly decried that Chinese public tenders previously open to imports now specifically request China-made products. I mean, what is the reality? How do you comment on that?
Well, I think this is a very common practice. Actually, you know, China is a very large country. It keeps on growing, and also China facing aging problems. So, you know, social, you know, protection, you know, systems or, you know, Medicare and the social care systems are always piling up the spendings. So in that case, you know, the authorities in China always try to carry out what we call the, you know, the collective, you know, procurement, which means we will buy from this company of certain drugs or devices with a certain bulk amount, a very, very large amount. But in return, you need to lower the price a little bit so we can, you know, shake hands with each other in the middle. So this is, I think, is very normal because in America, they have the kind of the bidding system as well. In India, in Japan, in South Korea, in European Union, I think most of the countries and regions have a similar practice because they want to raise up the, you know, protection levels and, you know, the or the medical service, you know, qualities for the patients or for the old. That's the reason why some of the bidding always, you know, winners are, you know, local made, because the local made have a more affordable price, especially in China. When our average per capita, you know, Medicare spending is not that enough. And also there's another fact worth mentioning is that most of the international giants, for example, the European medical devices company, they actually have lots of the factories and the branches in China. So most of the things that have been, you know, actually produced in China. And then when they try to sell back to China, they want to use international price. So this is kind of a bit unfair. Just take a look at the India. India have a very large generic drug system and industry. So when every international drug, you know, manufacturer or the pharmaceutical company sell the drugs in India, they always have to meet with the local level of the drug prices. So I think this is also common practice. I don't know why when it comes to China, it becomes a problem.
Well, in response, a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson, Wang Wenbin, as I said earlier, said the investigation would damage EU's image. He said all the outside world sees is that the European Union gradually moving towards protectionism. Do you agree with that?
Well, sort of, yes. we're not sure about how, you know, the situation is going to be eventually about this deal. We understand that in the European Parliament or in some certain European countries, the right, you know, or extremely right-wing, you know, parties are, you know, advocating such kind of, policies. Mm. It's not the majority's opinion. So as far as we know, this kind of the provocation is only in the intention level. So which means it's only been discussed, not forming into any, you know, real bill or act, you know, for now. But if they really need to do that, I think it is no doubt a protectionism. Mm. Because when Chinese company go to the European, you know, nations, or when their company try to, you know, when their, you know, advantages, you know, companies try to sell the products in China, we wouldn't give them kind of, you know, the double anti, you know, investigation for them. For example, if you know that in China, actually 90% or at least 80% of the high-end medical devices are produced by the developed nations, the German-made, America-made, UK-made, and Switzerland-made. Mm. You know, for example, the hemodialysis, you know, 80% of the products coming from the American and Germany, and they've been, you know, charging very, very high in this area for a very long time, but no Chinese, you know, authority has ever waged any kind of, you know, investigation on them, because we think this is a market-oriented practice. Mm. So we have to respect that. So if, you know, European Union is always advocated for the free trade and also the open market, if they really need to do that, I mean, they are actually, you know, kind of put themselves in the middle ground.
Mm. I mean, this is not the first time in recent months that EU has targeted China. Over the past few months, it targeted China's mostly green tech. For example, wind turbine, solar panel, electric cars. And China is now accused of overcapacity in green industry. I mean, Professor Chu, how do you look at this overcapacity issue? And does China really have that problem?
Well, I don't think we actually have what we call overcapacity issue. Just take a look at the whole world. We are, you know, very, very far away behind. We can meet the target of the MDG and SDG. You know, we're going to have the zero carbon target in the 2030 back in Europe. And we're going to have that target achieved in the whole world, probably around the 2050 or 2060 in the whole world. Now take a look how many solar panels we have all over the world. Probably, yes, we have some, you know, maybe full supply in European market or in certain part of the North American market. But even in China itself, we are still far, you know, behind our target of, you know, having enough solar panels, wind turbines to meet our green target. And also, when European Union is accusing China of that, just take a look. European Union is probably the most aggressive, you know, practitioners of the green policy. They won't meet the zero target, zero carbon target back in 2030, but the local capacity of the solar panel and wind turbine in European companies can only meet 3% of their, you know, demand.
Mm.
And I think Chinese company, when they just come in into this market, are providing very good quality to, you know, price ratio product. I think it's helping, you know, both sides.
Wow.
So accusing them, on one hand, accusing them, you know, dumping the products in the European market, but on the other hand, also they urge Chinese company to lower the price to help them to meet the target of the green, I think is also kind of a very complicated, isn't it?
Mm,
so I think the European Union really need to think clear about their policies.
Mm. Thank you, Professor Qu Qiang, for giving us so much insight on this issue. That was Professor Qu Qiang, fellow of the Belt and Road Research Center at Minzu University of China. This is World Today. We'll be right back.
Hello, my name is Alessandro Golombievsky Teixeira. I'm a professor of public policy management at Tsinghua University in Beijing. I am a great listener of the World Today. In my opinion, The World Today is one of the best China radio programs. In The World Today, we can get the best news and analysis in what is happening now in the world. So please, come to join us.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. An industrial expert says China will become a major producer, consumer, and exporter of hydrogen technologies, which would help reduce costs globally. Research Office Director Zhu Shuai at the World Industrial Research Institute, China Center for Information Industry Development, made the remark at the Zhongguancun Forum in Beijing. During the interview with my colleague Gao Yingshi, Zhu Shuai said China plays a significant role in the global development of hydrogen energy due to its vast market potential, and the country will continue to promote cooperation in hydrogen power and clean technologies.
What are the latest advancements in hydrogen energy technology, and how do you see these advancements shaping the future of the industry?
The latest advances in hydrogen energy technology include improving electrolysis efficiency, proton exchange membrane technology, solid-state hydrogen storage, and green hydrogen production. These advancements are shaping the future of the industry by making hydrogen a more valuable and competitive alternative to traditional fossil fuels. Fuel cell technology improvements. The fuel cell durability, performance, and cost effectiveness have significantly improved, particularly for fuel cells used in transportation and stationary power applications. And according to the U.S. Department of Energy, the cost of automotive polymer electrode membrane fuel cells has decreased by more than 80% since 2006. Companies like Toyota and Honda have already commercialized fuel cell electric vehicles with longer driving ranges and shorter refueling times compared to battery electric vehicles.
So how does the Zhongguancun Forum 2024 aim to foster discussions and collaborations in the fields of hydrogen energy, since you are going to participate in the forum?
The Zhongguancun Forum 2024, as a prominent international platform for technological innovation and exchange, is poised to foster discussions and collaborations in the field of hydrogen energy through several key strategies. Firstly, the forum will bring together leading scientists, researchers, industry leaders, policymakers, investors, and other stakeholders from around the world. While activity involved in hydrogen energy research, development, and deployment, this diverse gathering will facilitate direct dialogue and knowledge sharing among experts, fostering a comprehensive understanding of the latest advancements, challenges, and opportunities in the sector. Secondly, the forum's agenda will include dedicated sessions and panels specifically focused on hydrogen energy. These sessions will delve into topics such as hydrogen production, storage, and transportation, infrastructure development applications in various sectors. And questions and answers sessions will encourage in-depth exploration and exchange of ideas. Certainly, the forum will provide ample networking opportunities through formal and informal events, such as roundtable discussions, workshops, receptions, and one-on-one meeting arrangements. These interactions can facilitate the formation of new partnerships, collaborative research projects, technology transfer agreements, and investment deals between industry and government entities.
And can you discuss the potential for international cooperation in the hydrogen energy sector? And what role do events like Zhongguancun Forum play in facilitating these collaborations?
International cooperation in the hydrogen energy sector is vital for sharing expertise, resources, and best practices, as well as coordinating policies and standards. Events like the Zhongguancun Forum play a critical role in facilitating these collaborations by providing a platform for dialogue, information exchange, and partnership building among stakeholders from different countries and regions. They also help align global efforts towards common goals such as decarbonization and sustainable development. So organizations like the International Organization for Standardization and the International Electrotechnical Commission work to develop harmonized standards for hydrogen technologies, infrastructure, and safety, ensuring interoperability and facilitating global market development. The high-level policy stresses at the Zhongguancun Forum allow policymakers to discuss and align on regulatory frameworks, incentives, and international cooperation mechanisms needs to accelerate the global hydrogen transition. This discussion can inform nation strategies and contribute to the development of coordinated cross-border initiatives.
In your opinion, what are the most significant challenges facing the widespread adoption of hydrogen energy, and what steps are being taken to overcome these challenges?
The most significant challenges facing the widespread adoption of hydrogen energy include high costs, lack of infrastructure, and public perception. Steps being taken to overcome these challenges include investment in research and development, policy incentives, and pilot projects to demonstrate the feasibility of hydrogen technologies. I will give an example for the market acceptance and standardization. In the areas of challenges, the lack of established markets, standardized regulations, and the consumer familiarity with hydrogen as an energy carrier can hinder its adoption. International collaboration on standardization, as mentioned earlier, helps ensure the interoperability and the safety across the hydrogen value chain. Public awareness, campaigns, demonstrations, projects, and target incentives help stimulate demand and build confidence in hydrogen technologies.
So what are some of the key industry trends in hydrogen energy, and how do you see these trends evolving in the coming years?
The key industry trends in hydrogen energy include the increasing use of renewable sources for hydrogen production, the development of new storage and transportation technologies, and the expansion of applications beyond the traditional sectors, such as transportation and power generation. In the coming years, these trends are expected to continue, with increasing investment in green hydrogen production, expansion of hydrogen infrastructure, and the emergence of new hydrogen-based technologies and business models. As electrolyzer technology advances and economies of scale and realized, the cost of producing green hydrogen from renewable electricity is expected to decline significantly. The Hydrogen Council estimates that by 2030, green hydrogen costs could drop by two-thirds compared to today's levels, making it competitive with fossil-based hydrogen in many applications.
Zhu Shuai with China Center for Information Industry Development. That's all the time we have for this edition of World Today. I'm Liu Kun in Beijing. Thank you for staying with us. Bye for now.